And now I am here with Janine Yancey, the founder and CEO of M-Train. How you doing, Janine?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And, you know, today's topic is culture, and you are probably as knowledgeable as anyone about the subject of culture. Talk to us about your business. What's M-Train?
Thank you. So M-Train is online education and analytics on what we call the tricky culture issues, like harassment, bias, and ethics.
Okay.
And so we're a platform to give education, give advice, and then ultimately analytics on these issues.
Interesting. So it's an online platform. And maybe we can dive into each of them individually a little bit later, but How do we use your product? You're getting me some curiosity here about, like, how do I use an online platform to do something as warm and touchy-feely as building a culture?
Well, so it's a software as a service.
Okay.
You know, annual business subscription for each employee.
Okay.
You just either make it available or you gently nudge them to engage in certain programs. And then as they engage in lessons or programs, then we're feeding them information. We're feeding them little how to have conversations, how to kind of, direct people around them.
Walk me through a success story. How does it work? Who brought on the product onto their company and it changed their culture in some way?
So we actually just had a situation with a tech company in New York City where there's not one incident per se that will change the culture. It's the kind of aggregation of a bunch of, you know, actions basically. But in this one particular organization, it was somebody in the finance team where their boss said, you know, I just don't like Chinese people. She's Chinese.
Hmm. The Chinese person said, I don't like Chinese people?
No, the manager, who's Caucasian, said to the subordinate, I just don't like working with Chinese people.
Hmm.
So that was offensive, right? That would be under what we'd call the tricky culture issues.
Okay. And how did the platform help?
So she used the platform to write in, and we've got...
The person that felt offended.
Yes.
So the Chinese woman got on the platform and complained through the platform? Is that how it works?
The platform is not necessarily like a hotline, but it's give me some thoughts, give me some guidance. So I work for the finance director. He just said this. How do I respond to that?
Right?
And so we have lawyer experts all over the country. And our lawyer expert in New York City is familiar with, you know, that kind of area. I mean, not that you have to be geographically tailored to it. Said, okay, so sorry that happened to you. You know, why don't you try, you know, saying this to your manager and just kind of have the conversation this way and see how that goes. And if it doesn't go well, then maybe reach out to the HR business partner to help have a different conversation. And these are the types of issues that, for the most part, never get to the surface.
Right.
So they bubble, bubble, bubble.
So they bubble, and I'm guessing, I'm trying to put myself in those shoes. I don't want to make a big deal about it. I don't want to go to HR and, you know, draw attention to myself.
Exactly.
But I want to deal with it appropriately, and I can't, you know, I can go home and vent, but there's got to be a more productive way of dealing with it.
Exactly.
Okay, so the productive way is to submit that challenge online, and then to somebody from your office or somebody on your side, they jump on the phone with the people, or is it online?
It's all online. It's all through a little chat that's private, de-identified, so, you know, the employer doesn't know who this is.
Okay, so it's only brought to... So if the employee wants to keep it confidential, it stays confidential.
It stays confidential,
okay.
Right.
What if the employee wants... is there a part of the platform that actually helps facilitate the grievance or the next steps, or is it just more of an advice line?
It's more of an advisory, just guidance. And a lot of what we're doing is just giving them language to use so that they can, you know, have successful conversations.
Okay, so you've built this national company. You mentioned that you have offices here in Sacramento, Bay Area, East Coast. Talk to me about the way the company has, evolved over the years.
Yeah, so really kind of organically. So for the longest time, it was a small team, and we were just doing online education pretty straightforward. You know, there's been online education companies for 20 years now, and we were part of that.
Were you based out of the Bay Area originally or here in Sacramento?
So started the company in the Bay Area, and then when I moved up to Sacramento some time ago, we kind of moved up here.
And you moved up here for a guy, is that right? A guy named Yancey?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the name Yancey is, you know, I think if you hear the name Yancey, especially if you've been around here a while, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, a guy named Yancey did my roof 25 years ago. Are you related to that guy, right? It sounds like you might be.
I am. And the funny thing is, coming from San Francisco, my husband's like, well, you know, Sac is kind of a small town, and, you know, like, my name is kind of known. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not.
Sure it is.
I said, no, I'm like the opposite. I'm like, oh, come on, who knows you? No one. And then I come up to Sacramento, and I'm like, oh, I guess that people actually do kind of know that name.
So was that, has it been helpful, or has it?
No, you know, most of our business is not in Sacramento, frankly.
Yeah. Okay, so you've moved the, I guess the headquarters, if you will, moved your office at least to Sacramento.
Exactly.
And then talk to us about how the company has grown. We earlier talked about your CRM maybe having being down for a little bit. I won't mention the name of the company unless you do. But so you have a lot of people that help drive new business. So when somebody's disappointed that their CRM went down, that means they're selling a lot of stuff. So that's my take. So talk to us about your team and what that looks like.
Yeah, so a couple things I think are of note. So in 2016, I wrote an article predicting the Me Too movement, and it was probably about a year before the Me Too movement happened. And for me, it seemed pretty obvious. It was like, okay, we have different demographics coming into the workplace, and the younger demographics have zero tolerance for the type of actions that some of the older demographics, the older people experience. So you get that. Plus you have social media, and the two is like, bada bing, bada boom, it's all going to go online, and organizations are going to get, you know, combusted, basically. And that was really kind of the catalyst for me for the first time to start to seek out some outside investment. Up until that time, we'd been organic and kind of just growing at our own pace, and we decided to go bring on a product team. And so we made that happen in 2017. They're down in San Francisco. So we brought in people from Adobe, from LinkedIn, from McKinsey Consulting to build a platform with machine learning and predictive analytics to help do what I just described so that somebody can go on their phone and type in a question and get a response.
Okay.
Right?
How do you use the machine learning? Describe how that part works with the product.
So you type in, you know, dating at work, and a whole bunch of stuff will come up about dating at work,
okay,
other questions.
So I'm an employee,
answers,
and I got some extra time on my hands, or maybe I have a challenge of some kind, and I can type in the search what my problem might be, and you get all kinds of responses.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And they're not what you would, if you Googled it, you might have a whole different set of responses than what if I was on your platform. I'm going to get the right responses.
It's more tailored. So the one thing that I think of is Quora. I don't know about you, but I'm on Quora quite a bit. And when I see employment law questions on Quora, and I'm an employment lawyer by background, I always cringe because I'm imagining some software developer person who doesn't know anything kind of winging it. And it's like a person playing doctor to wing it. Like, that's not the appropriate place to just wing it. So, you know, this is actually guidance from people who've been around the block and know these situations and can see, hey, we're at square one, here's what's going to happen at square five.
Yeah.
So that was that. But the other issue, responding to, you know, how the business is grown, is just in the last couple of years, in response to Me Too, you know, the number of states that are mandating this type of training has increased, right? So, you know, a year ago, this annual spend on, you know, compliance training, so harassment, code of conduct, so on and so forth, for mid to enterprise businesses was about $10 billion a year. And for $10 billion a year, you get nothing. You basically get like a completion certificate. Like, there's no ROI. So that $10 billion a year has gone up now because New York came online, Illinois is going to come online, Texas is now thinking about it. So the number of employees that are going to have necessary compliance training is increasing.
Are you providing that training?
Yes.
Currently? How do you provide the training? What do you do?
Well, so everything that I've just described for you meets the needs of the regulations. I actually helped draft the regulation here in California that went into effect the beginning of this year. So we're all employees have to be trained now. It used to be just the managers. Now it's all employees.
But do you go into a workplace and do the training, or is this an online sort of training?
It's all online.
So is it? Does that make it more cost effective? Does it make it? Is it more pain free somehow? Because nobody will. I mean, nobody. People. Most people don't want to go in and sit through something like sexual harassment training. Is it what's better about this?
Okay, so a couple of things. So one, most people have the same kind of thought about sexual harassment training that you just illustrated by your body.
It's like, I'll go do it if it's if I have to. But like, okay, I'd rather go sell something.
Well, so let me just kind of address that. So we look at that as. You know, what you deem to be harassment is probably really different than what another person deems to be harassment. And this is what bubbles up into conflict and bad culture.
Okay.
Right? So we look at these are people issues. Like, forget about the law and sexual harassment. Think more about you said something, you had the best of intentions, you didn't have any bad, you know, thoughts. And you just piss somebody off. Yep. And you don't necessarily know it. And that other person is brewing about whatever you said or did. Mm-hmm. And this is what we see all day long until it explodes. And you have the Me Too movement.
So the training is not only great for compliance. It's helpful for operating the business beyond checking a box with HR.
Right. As we say, it goes beyond the compliance needs and it actually gets into the people issues and strengthening your ability to interact in a real positive way.
Does an employer like it because it's cheaper, faster? Why would I rather do that than hire the person to come in and just, you know, do it, maybe more face-to-face? What's the difference?
So typically, employers like it because it's great for diverse workforce or dispersed workforces, rather. And you can do it online, you know, at night on the weekends.
Okay.
But then it's continuous, right? So if you have a trainer come in, you have a great experience, hopefully, for, you know, that one workshop. But then next week, 2 weeks later, a month later, you kind of forget about it. You know, with this, it's an ongoing conversation.
Okay. It's individual training, though, rather than getting a group of 10 and get trained by somebody, or is it a group training?
It's individual, but what we've been able to do is make it social as well. So, for example, we're asking pretty targeted questions, and you're answering, and you see how the rest of your organization answered versus how the global community answered.
Interesting.
So, for example, we were just kind of going over it in our own team because we all took our own program. And one of the questions was, in off-duty, kind of outside events, you know, do we act appropriately most of the time, sometimes, never, right? And it was really interesting to see the variety of responses. So I think one thing that we all do just as people is we think that our perspective is shared by everyone else. And it's really interesting to see, I'm actually an outlier. I thought this was great, and yet everyone else is thinking that we were off the rails in this last company event.
Wow, interesting. So thinking about, I'll bounce forward into the business. So you took on investors. You've scaled the company. What's the plan? I mean, where do you see this company going from here?
So we just shipped this new solution and platform. It took us 2 years to build it. And our plan is really to, you know, scale that as much as possible. I mean, I would love to see most people in workplaces having access to information about their rights and their responsibilities, as well as personalized guidance about how they interact with their coworkers.
Yeah. And I want to dive deeper into the problem for a second, because I feel like maybe I didn't dive in there. You mentioned the Me Too movement, and you were ahead of the curve. What did you see happening? Why did you know that there was something brewing? I think we had all of America knows that social media is on a meteoric rise and that everybody's sharing everything. But in terms of the Me Too movement, I think some of the people might be sheltered from understanding that there was change that needed to happen, or a movement that was about to happen.
I just think it's changing social attitudes. And so I saw it personally in some of our programs where we'll have, you know, video workplace scenes, which I think we do a pretty good job of. So they're realistic, they're relatable. And we always ask learners to rate the scenes. And all of a sudden I saw people saying, this is harassment. It's something that we would not consider harassment. And then when we actually analyze even further, we could see, is usually the younger demographic is rating things as harassment, and the older demographic is like, it's okay. And so I saw, okay, so just society-wise, our attitudes, our social values are changing, and we've got five generations all working side by side right now with each other. So you put these five generations together with social media, and that's going to happen.
You know, it's interesting because I sit here in all like open-mindedness to this whole thing that's occurring before our very eyes, where it seems to me that the younger generations, including me when I was younger, we were more accepting of different kinds of behavior than maybe what our parents might have been, right? And that whole trend of accepting and being sort of like live and let live, it feels like today we're much more like that as a society. In when I grew up, we were much more like that than it was like in the 50s. But yet, in the workplace now, it's this huge problem whereby we're hypersensitive to you know, these issues, but yet kind of generally as a society, we're more accepting of I don't want to call it, you know, and being more free-spirited in our approach.
I think we're at a point where we're changing right now. I mean, I always compare this to the turn of the century, early 1900s. I mean, to me, that was the Industrial Revolution. It gave rise to unions. It gave rise to a lot of conflict. We're in that same dynamic right now. We're in the digital revolution, right? And so machine learning, IA, is replacing a lot of, you know, manual processes. And just how we think about things is changing, like, rapidly.
Do you think that people are more likely to complain today or call to people's attention when stuff is not right? And so, really, this is just giving them the freedom to sort of do that, where maybe they just didn't feel that freedom in the past?
I think definitely people feel way more comfortable voicing their concerns and being brave about that, which is great. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do at M-Train is actually to give, you know, a nice platform to do that in a constructive way.
Yeah.
Because right now there's either, it's kind of an either or. So you either have what we call the litigation paradox, where the employer, like, don't ask, don't tell. And they're just trying to do something kind of superficially and get their completion certificates to say, yes, I did my job as an employer without really asking the questions. Or on the other extreme, you've got social media and you've got people, making, you know, an issue out of something that maybe could be handled differently. But it's, you know, it's kind of amplified on social media. So I still think that as a society, we're waiting to see how do we handle these issues in a more constructive way.
Well, I want to thank you for what you do, helping all the employers out there across America. And, you know, it's not just compliance. It's about getting better. So thanks for sharing your story. Janine Yancey, founder and CEO of M-Train. Thank you very much.
Thank you.